space barrier is absolutely critical to border security. It's also what our professionals at the border want and need. This is just common sense.
A little bit from the president's address last night from the Oval Office as we get started hour number three of Mobile Mornings here on FM Talk 106.5. And it's also time to check in with our friend, number one, the most important, and then radio show host extraordinaire, writer for Lanyap and Breitbart and Yellowhammer News, and a man that actually doesn't just say it like the politicians. He has spent his time in the 67 counties of Alabama and even seen their courthouses. It is our buddy Jeff Poore. Hey, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Always a pleasure and so much to talk about. First of all, congratulations on the new gig. You're checking in from Huntsville, the home of your new radio show.
Yes, I've joined the ranks of radio host of Alabama radio host. So, yeah, I have a, for those who haven't been listening, I now have a 2-5 show on WVNN in Huntsville. So, obviously, it's, you know, the big talker up here. But I'm the afternoon drive guy.
Well, this is good. We tricked you into getting into the business. He's going to be cursing us here within months. So let's talk about last night and the Oval Office address. President calls earlier in the week for time from the networks and gets it. It was, I don't know, 8, 10, 11 minutes?
Yeah, I think they said 9 or 10 minutes.
9 or 10 minutes long, which, by the way, I think that may be the new standard for all political commentary from members of government. Let's keep it to 10 minutes. How do you think the president did? And then I want to ask you about a note you made in email to us saying that you thought the speech sounded Stephen Miller-ish. I think that was interesting. So roll it out here.
Yeah, he did what he had to do. It made the economic argument. It made the public safety argument. And he did take got a few jabs in at the opponents of the wall. But it did all the things it was supposed to do. I'm not sure that it's, you know, I know people are clamoring on the right for him to take it to the American public and cut through the media, which is just dead set against about anything that Trump would do. But I don't know that it really moved things, if it really moved public opinion. I think the base liked it. I think a lot of people on the right, a lot of Trump supporters thought it was what he needed. But you got to look at this through the prism of what's the goal here to end the shutdown, get your $5 billion for the wall, and the idea is that you're going to get public support for it. I don't know if public support really changed. I'm not really sure. I guess we'll have to wait the next few days. But if public support does change, I think it's more of going to be a backlash against the Pelosi and Schumer presentation.
Yeah, I want to get to that in just a second. You wrote in the email to us that it sounded Stephen Miller-ish, which is interesting. I mean, I guess you need to give the backstory for people who don't know that name. I mean, if you know Jeff Sessions, you probably may know something about Stephen Miller.
Yeah, Stephen Miller was a policy guy for Jeff Sessions for years and years and years when he was in the Senate. I think he worked for whatever committee he was working on, but he was an immigration hawk. He was always a guy that was, at least what I worked in Washington, when I was working for the Daily Caller and later for Breitbart, he was a guy pushing out stories, pushing out Sessions' speeches, and you just knew when you heard Jeff Sessions speak on the floor about this issue that Stephen Miller was writing a lot of these speeches. And you hear some of the same kind of rhetoric, the same tone, the same argument about compassion. That has the signature thumbprint of Stephen Miller on it, who obviously when Trump first announced he was going to run for president, he left Jeff Sessions' office to go work for Trump. And then later on, when Trump won, he went to go work in the White House as a policy advisor and obviously a speechwriter as well.
I want to get your reaction to a couple clips here. Let's first go to last night. Here's the president talking about this claim that the border wall or any kind of structure there would be immoral.
Some have suggested a barrier is immoral. Then why do wealthy politicians build walls, fences, and gates around their homes? They don't build walls because they hate the people on the outside, but because they love the people on the inside. The only thing that is immoral is the politicians to do nothing and continue to allow more innocent people to be so horribly victimized.
Now, on the rebuttal, Nancy Pelosi said this was an obsession for President Trump.
On the very first day of this Congress, House Democrats passed Senate Republican legislation to reopen government and fund smart, effective border security solutions. But the president is rejecting these bipartisan bills, which would reopen government, over his obsession with forcing American taxpayers to waste billions of dollars on an expensive and ineffective wall. A wall he always promised Mexico would pay for.
That doesn't sound like people that are getting close on a negotiation to me, Jeff.
No, and neither side's really going to seem to budge. I was talking to Congressman Robert Atterholt on Monday. He was a guest on my show. He said this shutdown's going to be different than all the others because you don't really have a bunch of things that you can negotiate on. You have one thing. It's the wall. Maybe you could give a little on the number on the wall and cut the number in half, but that's about it. There's not like, well, we'll give up Dreamers for the wall, or we'll give up, you know, whatever entitlement program spending on it for a bigger tax cut, or, you know, there's no bargaining chips. You just have one chip, and it's just that one chip on the table. So the idea is nothing foreseeable is going to make that change. What may make it change is public opinion or some sort of incident where they need to reopen the government, at least temporarily, and then address this issue later on down the road.
Okay, so you write in your email to us about those optics here of the response from Speaker Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. You said the optics were miserable. I wonder if they even bothered with a trial run. Now, a lot of us have had fun with that still shot of Schumer and Pelosi. I said it kind of looked like parents when they figured out you had a house party while they were out of town. But it was, if you could look terse, it looked that way to me.
Yeah, and here's the thing with these politicians, especially a Pelosi and a Schumer. They've been at it for so long, they get a little, I don't want to say cocky, but just we don't need to practice this. We just put up some flags. They don't really think these things through because they're very sure of themselves, right? So I think they didn't really look at this on a TV screen and say, you know, maybe not. Maybe we try something different and tone it down a little, or whatever. I just think that they miscalculated here. They wanted to get a response in. They were clamoring for the response. It was a big deal. It was a big controversy, but they got their response. They got the networks to give them time as well. And it just did not, I think it did more harm than help. If they had just not said anything and not had come on TV, that they would probably be a little bit better off this morning.
Jeff, we hear the term fact checkers more than ever now. I think if it's not the 2019 word of the year, I'd be surprised, and we're only 9 days into the year. But yesterday, and I was flipping through all the different CBSs, ABCs, Foxes, CNNs, and they were all ready and had their fact checkers ready to go right after the president's address. And I think this all started, I don't know if PolitiFact was the first fact checker to kind of put that name on the map. But back then, it seemed like they were actually checking facts. And on CNN last night, I noticed one fact. They actually had two fact checkers on the behind the desk, one from the Toronto Star who followed up the first fact checker.
From Canada.
And he took President Trump's comment that politicians build walls around their houses and said that it was a lie because President Obama doesn't have a wall around his house. Well, the president alluded to that, but it wasn't in last night's address that he said President Obama by name. So some of these fact checkers almost need fact checkers themselves. I'm wondering, are they oversaturating the market with fact checking? Like, are they doing a disservice by having so many different people out there trying to spread their agenda instead of actually getting down to the truth?
I mean, I think people are desensitized to it. We know where CNN's coming from. That's no secret, right? I think Trump could have gone up there and said the sky was blue and, you know, it would have been fact-checked. To me, that was coming. Like you said, the Obama example is a great example. We know Paul Ryan and other politicians have walls around their house. It's been documented. So I don't know. It's nitpicky, and it hurts the credibility of these news organizations, but they don't seem to mind. They're just kind of plowing right ahead with it, and there's an audience out there for that. The CNNs and the MSNBCs of the world, they recognize there's a distaste especially among the more highly educated. There's a distaste about Trump, you know, and I just think that's just part of the presentation that they want. They're going to oppose this president. What they need to do, because it's like a lot of people want to watch. There's a lot of people that watch cable news want, especially with those two audiences, and that's just one of the new bells and whistles and features it's going to be. And if they hadn't have done that, then there might have been their small audiences, but still very loyal audiences probably wouldn't have liked it.
You know, Jeff, we talk about the back and forth that the president has with the press and the press has with the president. So were you at all surprised with, I guess, pushback from some who say, if the president calls the press the enemy, why are we then bumping regular programming to watch the president's address? I mean, don't you think that no matter what people's thoughts are of the president, when the president speaks, that is the time, especially when he's, you know, speaking from the Oval Office, that is the time to cover that, whether you agree or disagree.
Yeah, well, and the idea he needed to speak to the American public without the filter of the media, and the media didn't like that. Now, keep in mind, this clamoring for the fact-check stuff was, you had Don Lemon go on the night before, say maybe we need to put the president on a delay in case the lies are so bad. There's a real... I think there's a real mentality in the media that obviously the Trump comments about the press being the enemy over the line, no doubt about it. But the there is a mentality in the media that's not friendly. There's no doubt about that. So that was the whole idea of that speech. It was, hey, I need to speak to the American people, get my message through without the media filter. I don't know that it really made a difference. I think the media just jumped right in right after it happened. So, people listen. The media needs to do its job, but it's kind of not clear to me what the media's job is these days.
All right. Can you hang on for another segment with us?
Absolutely.
All right. Coming right back. There's lots of news from Montgomery to talk about and Alabama names that want to be your next senator. We'll talk about that. Some familiar names. That and a whole lot more coming up next. More with Jeff Poore right here on Mobile Mornings. FM Talk 106.5, and it is Mobile Mornings. Continue our conversation with Jeff Poore from WVNN Radio and also Lanyap, Breitbart, and Yellowhammer News. How many jobs you have, man? Lazy.
Way too many.
That's for sure. All right.
Way too many.
We'll bring it back home here for a second, but it has the federal angle to it. The 2020 Alabama U.S. Senate race. You said AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne was up in the northern part of the state, up in Fort Payne.
Yeah, he's going to be up there Saturday. Speaking to the DeKalb County Republicans, got a press release the other day about it, and you can get a little bit further away from Mobile than
but not
that,
much.
But
not
by much. Yeah, maybe yeah. Scottsboro. Then we're talking. You're at the extremes of the state, but he's up here, and it's pretty clear when he's making the rounds in the state of Alabama that he's. He's looking at that U.S. Senate run in 2020, but I think that one's a given. The more interesting thing to me is who else might try to run. And early on, it looked like a lot of people, right? A lot of people might run, but I'm not so sure that's the case. I think you may have a couple others run, maybe that are like the Jim Zieglers, you know, of the world. But mm-hmm. I think what I understand, and we had one of our Yellowhammer reporters, Sean Ross, on yesterday, he thinks that it's going to be Will Ainsworth or Del Marsh, but it won't be Will Ainsworth and Del Marsh. If one decides to run, the other won't run. I think that makes a little bit of sense. They have a lot of the same donors. They kind of run with that same circle in Montgomery. And I think that's what you're looking at. Whoever comes out of the Marsh-Ainsworth bracket will be the primary competition for Bradley Byrne for that Republican nod.
Well, you can look at it just geographically, both North Alabama guys. But I think that's interesting. Del Marsh, the old bull. I mean, I know Will's been around as a rep before being elected for lieutenant governor, but he's some new blood in there as well. But you're saying that basically it sounds like it's Del to decide whether he's going to run or not. If Del says he's going to run, that Ainsworth goes away?
Yeah, and Ainsworth, to be honest, the idea is that a guy like Ainsworth would run, and he's a young guy, and he'd be in the United States Senate for a long, long time, and ultimately he would be where Richard Shelby is today, head of an important committee, doing what Southern senators do, is send a lot of stuff back to to the state and pork or whatever. That's the idea. Now, but... is he ready? You know, I think these are some questions. He spent 2 years in the legislature, 2 years as a lieutenant governor, then U.S. senator. I mean, that's a fast track, right? Is that maybe a little too fast?
I think so.
I don't know. I mean, if he could raise a bunch of money, he was a top vote getter in this last election cycle, and he's got a little bit of name recognition. I'm not completely sold on the idea, but I could see where the forces are pushing it.
You know, I think that you see two names there that would negate each other. Actually, three names. Like, if you split the state between us down here, Bradley Byrne has obviously the name recognition, would take a lot of votes. In the northern part of the state, Ainsworth or Marsh would do it. And that then maybe would negate each other and leave somebody else a chance, some kind of margin there to run on.
So Marsh is an Anniston guy, which I think comes into play, makes him more of a Birmingham kind of guy. And obviously, Ainsworth, Gunnersville, that's northern part of the state.
Anything north of Camden to us is, you know, North Alabama.
Yeah, but let's look at this geographically. I don't know. Marsh, he's known. How well-known is he statewide? And what's the name recognition between the differences between the three of those candidates? I don't know, but who might that fourth person be? I mean, obviously, you look at the Wiregrass is wide open. I think Montgomery may be wide open, but they're so exposed to statewide politics just by virtue of being Montgomery, right? There's not a real, like, a big Birmingham name. People thought about Gary Palmer for a while, but he seems to have shrugged that off. I don't know who a Birmingham-type candidate, like what Luther Strange was in the 17th special election, who that would be. I do think Bradley Byrne's kind of got a leg up on everybody. He ran for governor in 2010. Everybody knows who he is. He's got the statewide name ID. He's on the get-acquainted thing, and he's obviously making the rounds around the state right now while the other, you know, whoever the other candidate might be, they're still trying to figure that out.
Yeah, let's talk about Montgomery for a second and what is not happening in Montgomery. As Kelly was reporting this morning, Governor Ivey is down here touring schools and then has this inauguration party going on at the very southern extreme of the state. Actually, I mean, it makes sense because, well, Baldwin County is the, you know, the golden goose for state tax revenue, but it's not in Montgomery. It's not North Alabama. It's not Birmingham. It's down here.
Right. And that's... You know, there's like a concert and a lot of attention being given to it.
Parade.
So maybe that's a sign of things to come and that Baldwin and Mobile counties won't be like the redheaded stepchild. I know when you talk to legislators up here, you might as well be talking about Venezuela when you talk about Southwest Alabama.
I feel
it's incredible. It's really incredible. I mean, everything south of... Bruton is the beach, you know.
Right.
Oh man, if I lived in Mobile, I'd go to the beach every day. And it's just weird how people think about the other parts of the state, where I'm sure y'all probably think everything north of the Tennessee River is Huntsville or whatever. I don't know how people think down there about what they think about Huntsville, but I know there's a very weird kind of conception. But I think Ivy having part of her inauguration festivities down there, that says a lot for maybe a different kind of a change in tone about the way the state kind of functions together.
All right. Remind folks they want to get more of what you are talking about, what you're writing about. Where do they go?
It's twitter.com/Jeff_Poor.
All right. And remember, you can check him out in the Beltway Beat, of course, in the Landyap every week. And check him out as he does a show afternoons at VNN up in Huntsville. 8:30. Grab some calls when we get back. Yeah, Governor Ivey touring schools. Governor Ivey, once again, we have the open invitation to stop by the show. We have a box of children's books already put together, big Rubbermaid tote full.
Already tweeted out.
We'll sling that in the back of the, imagine she's in a, like a big SUV of some sort. You got room, Governor. Come by and get these books, please. Please.
Hey, thanks, Kane. 837 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Let's head over to McConnell Automotive and talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
How are you guys?
Hey, doing great. Let's talk about this brand new Sierra truck. If you're in the market for a new truck, you can't do any better than this.
No, and I'm so glad you brought it up, Dalton, because I think anybody out there that's a truck lover, if you're driving one, you think you might want to get a new truck, especially, Dalton, if somebody's been driving a Ford or a Dodge or something like a Toyota Tundra for a while. The new GMC, what GMC did, Dalton, is they listened to everything the truck buyer said they wish they had in the truck, and they gave it to you. So what I really want to do is invite everybody that has not seen or driven the truck to come by. And my favorite version, Dalton, is the AT4 because it is a bad boy. It's a lifted 2.5-inch lift kit from the factory, and the big wheels, the red hooks up front of it. But basically, Dalton, it's more horsepower. It's got more room in it than the Ford. And you know what? It just looks bigger and badder than anything on the road. And I want people to come check this new GMC Sierra out at McConnell anytime they want to.
I love it. Well, we appreciate it, Mitch. Have a great day.
Man, y'all have a great one, Dalton.
That's Mitch McConnell. Go check him out at McConnellAutomotive.com or go see him and the crew in person at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65.
All right, and one quick programming note. Auburn Hoops starts on FM Talk 106.5 this evening. They are now in conference play.
Mm-hmm.
6 o'clock tonight, Auburn and
Ole Miss. You got your 11th-ranked Tigers who keep moving up the AP Top 25 rankings. Ole Miss actually started conference play on Saturday. They beat Vanderbilt 81-71, so a good test for Bruce Pearl and the squad as they get us started tonight.
All right, and that game at 6 o'clock. So what's working with Cam Marston that usually runs at that time is moving to 1 o'clock today. So a special one-hour edition of Midday Mobile. That will be noon to 1, and then What's Working comes on at 1 o'clock. All right, go to the phones, and the phone number, by the way, if I haven't told you recently, the digits, as the kids say, 343-0106. And maybe you're not going to call or text today. We wish you would, but sometime soon you'll probably have some comment you want to make. So go to your contacts, put in FM Talk 106.5. Or whatever radio station, however you want to put it, and put the phone number in. So if y'all ain't from around here, it's 251-343-0106. 343-0106. All right.
Don't forget our website. We're still voting.
We are.
Oh, that's right. Remind folks why they need to go to the website.
Yeah, so, you know, if you were watching the riveting TV like we were last night and listening to the president and then the rebuttal from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, well, we want to know, how long do you think the shutdown will last? And so you have a number of options for your viewing pleasure. You can vote for within a week, by the end of January, in 1 to 3 months, in 3 to 6 months. You can vote, it won't reopen by the end of 2019, and the dismal, the government will never reopen. So you have your options there. It'd be great to hear from you.
All right, y'all can vote online, fmtalk1065.com. Now let's go to Freddie in Mobile. Hey, Freddie.
Good morning, Sean and Kelly.
And Dalton.
I know you're screening that. I was a little disappointed with my president last night because on the campaign trail, his constant remark was that he would build a wall and he would get Mexico to pay for it. So right. I didn't hear any of that in the conversation whatsoever.
It's a fence, and we're paying for it.
Yeah, but, I look like that being deception, deceiving someone to say one thing and don't follow through with it. You know, he's been good on making promises and keeping them, but that never did come up. And a speech to the nation.
It's interesting.
Night.
You know, I've talked about it a couple times. There's things I think there's self-inflicted injuries president has done, painting himself into this corner. And one of those is the rhetoric about having Mexico pay for it. And I know there's people say, well, you know, like the president did last night through the trade agreement, that's how Mexico will pay for it through these trade agreements. Fine. And you know what? When he was saying that on the campaign trail, I was rolling my eyes back then because I said, you promising you're going to get another sovereign country to do something, that's a pretty big stretch. I wonder, though, Freddie, if most people did think that that was just rhetoric, we're going to get the wall built, because there's some polling out, I think yesterday morning or this morning, that showed a lot of Americans are not surprised that it's going to be U.S. taxpayer dollars paying for it. But let's put it in perspective, too. I wish it was a big deal, Freddie. I wish people in Washington cared about $5 billion, because, you know, that's money we all have to pay back. But when they start acting like they're really gunched up over spending $5 billion or not spending $5 billion, look what they do every day up there. I mean, that's like, I hate to say it, I hate to be one of these people, but I mean, that's chump change to them in Washington.
But if you're thinking about 2,000 miles of wall on the southern border, they say on the northern border from Canada, a bunch of people are coming across. You're going to be a one up there too. Don't want to take up all your day. But thank I want to hear what you were saying.
All right. And Freddie, I appreciate it. I don't know that there's been a big push for a northern wall there on it. And you know, it's funny. You hear the, is it a contiguous wall? Is it a wall? You know, make an argument or fence. Somebody's going to be correcting me on the text line in a second. The thing. The wall fence thing. The barrier. How about that? We'll call it the barrier.
Do you remember when it was described as translucent?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think about
like
that, like that
Saran
Windex
wrap.
Commercial. You know when the bird flies into the...
you know, the one thing you talk about, and the president's going to push on this, I'm sure, when he's down in McAllen, Texas tomorrow, talking about this, is using the barrier, before somebody tries to correct, the barrier in certain areas to make it easier for Homeland Security and ICE to enforce immigration. Because... yeah, I learned this kind of in a backwards way. I mean, it would make sense. It's not like I have some eureka moment y'all have never thought of. But I remember talking about the prison expansion plans with different people from the state and just going, why do y'all want to spend this money on these new prisons? I understand the federal receivership. I've been following that story for a couple of years on this show. But I said, you know, why is it that we can't just add on to the prisons we have? Why can't we do these things? And I had Senator Cam Ward and some people that have been on this prison committee that have actually studied it. Aren't you saying, I'll tell you what I think. They studied it and they said, here's the deal. Our leading cost right now for the Department of Corrections for Alabama is staffing. It's human beings, is corrections officers, right? So that's the big cost. So here's the story. You build a new higher-tech facility, bigger prisons, more walls equal less people. And that's what they do in the prison system. The walls and the bars and all those kind of things at a prison let them lower the number of corrections officers that have to be present to run that prison. Well, in a similar idea, if you have you still have to have, I would like to see that we're using drones. I heard the Democrats talk about it last night, these other ideas. I want those implemented as well, like Schumer and Pelosi talked about, you know, different ways to detect drugs in cars. And although dogs do a pretty darn good job, mm-hmm. by the way, with all our new technology,
right.
You know, man's best friend seems to still do a great job there. But you could put up a structure along the border in certain areas where you get surging, and that helps fewer security personnel from Homeland Security and ICE do the job that many more could do. Now, of course, I can play devil's advocate and say wherever that barrier, I'm not using wall or fence, that barrier ends, then people come around the end of it. You know, I mean, the way you see anywhere there's a barrier near your office or your neighborhood, wherever a fence ends, there's a worn down trail where people come around the end of it, right? I mean, that's just human mm-hmm. nature and the mm-hmm. path of least resistance. So you can argue some of that, but in given areas where there's a big volume of people coming across, maybe that barrier helps, you know, stem that tide. And it's been shown actually in evidence from stuff they did in the 90s and 2000s during the Clinton administration and on past in some of those big border crossing areas. Those structures have absolutely reduced the illegal immigration in those places. Now, do I think through, I mean, you know, they asked this at a presser the other day, and it's one of my favorite subjects, and it seems like this is one of these hypocritical moments that back when Barack Obama was in office, I ranted about eminent domain being abused, and now that President Trump is talking about it, it doesn't seem to get the traction. You got to ask this question. Now, eminent domain can be used for national security. So if the president says this is, like he has, a national security issue, he's going to have the right for eminent domain going through the border. Mm. But can you eminent domain, does a country need to eminent domain every piece of property along the entire border, or is it picking certain places to put these barriers? These are the questions. This is what should be happening in Washington. They should be going, like you said the other day, can they just sit down and like really negotiate? But like, okay, well, we're not going to do 2,000 miles, but we're going to do this section, we're going to do this other section. But they don't, because they paint themselves into corners. Mm-hmm. Whether it's President Trump saying it's got to be $5.16 billion, mm-hmm. and it, you know what, I'm making Mexico pay for it, or it's Democrats saying that any structure, any funding is immoral. You heard it last night. Where is the middle ground that they would be talking about things like this? I don't. Maybe members of Congress behind the scenes are doing it, but it's not in front of the American people.
Well, I think when you talk about eminent domain, though, first of all, you have to understand what it means. And for some people, they haven't even heard of that word, let alone will it directly impact them. So it's very easy to kind of push that to the side. But then when you have a greater understanding, because if you're talking about, you know, people with all this acreage, and I think farmers first, you know, and you know, there's a big push when it came to farmers and their support of the president. How would that impact, you know, future votes if he's going in and, you know, for the crisis sake, as they're calling it, and doing that, how will that impact votes? Now, from the president's vantage point, you know, looking at his timeline, he tweeted, thank you for so many nice comments regarding my Oval Office speech, a very interesting experience, you know, that's on that side. But I don't know, but then 11 minutes ago, and thank you to our texter or tweeter who alerted us to this tweet, President now, 11 minutes ago, says billions of dollars are sent to the state of California for forest fires that, with proper forest management, would never happen. Unless they get their act together, which is unlikely, I have ordered FEMA to send no more money. It is a disgraceful situation in lives and money.
Yeah, that's a whole other, you know, story we did on the midday show with a forester and talked about those programs out there. You know what would be interesting? If in an attempt to get the money for the wall, they go find all these places, take money from, and then when they're done paying for it, they don't reallocate that money. A boy can dream, Kenny.
A boy can dream.
A boy can dream, and that's what I'm doing here. All right. Grab some more phone calls when we get back at 343-0106, 343-0106. That should be in your contacts list. And as Kelly said at the beginning of the segment, go vote, y'all. Front page of FMTalk1065.com. How long is this shutdown going to last? You can vote right now. We'll tally those votes up here before the end of the hour. At 852 FM Talk 1065 online, FMTalk1065.com. Also, Facebook, look for FM Talk 1065. And, you know, the discussion of the flooding going on in the rivers and all that, I've posted up quite a few pictures here from my weekend and some places that are seeing some pretty big flood water. You can check those out on the Facebook page for FM Talk 1065 Outdoors. So just put Outdoors at the end of your regular search and you'll find that Facebook page as well and check them out there. All right, we're in day 9 now of the new year. Day 9. Ninth day of January. What have you done about your New Year's resolution? I know the other night you said, well, we're going to do this here. We're going to get organized. We're going to get a new step, the right direction. Hey, hand me that. And then you said, but you said you're going to get organized. You're going to get rid of the clutter in your home in 2019 or your office or get rid of that storage unit. Well, time is ticking here to get moving on this. I got a way to make it happen and put yourself on deadline, which is always something good for me. Make that appointment with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. That's my buddy Trey. He and his crew work in Mobile and Baldwin counties, working on commercial, residential property, storage units. They could come to your house and go up the creaky attic ladder stair springy thing, get the junk there, get the junk from the junk room. Like most people have a junk drawer. If you've accumulated a junk room, get rid of it. Open up that space. It used to be a guest room. It used to be a home office. It might be your she shed or man cave. Whatever it needs to be, get rid of the junk. And it happens pretty quickly when 1-800-GOT-JUNK shows up. They quote you a price. If y'all agree on that price, that's the price you pay, even if the job turns out to be bigger than they thought it was or not. So get the junk out of your way. Get started with that New Year's resolution. It's day 9 of the new year. Make that call. 1-800-GOT-JUNK or online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. All right, 854. You know, I saw this from Terry. I saw your, I don't know if I have time to get into it. He said, civics lesson, The border is manned by CBP, which includes Customs and Border Patrol. ICE usually only gets involved once they have entered the country. So thank you. He said, you can't take money once Congress allocates it. It has to go into the pocket. Congress says you don't have to spend it, but you can't switch pockets. Okay, Terry, let me throw this in the mix because I did some reading. I could be wrong, but I read this from what I thought was a reliable source, that if the president does move forward, which he didn't mention last night, this emergency action.
The big red button.
Yes. And, you know, I mean, this is not, and people say like, oh, it's never been done. Jimmy Carter did it. President Bush, 43, did it. You know, you have these emergency actions. It gives the president, and you know I don't like growth of executive branch power. It's just something I'm not a big fan of, but it's a thing. With that emergency action, they can take money that has been allocated, has been appropriated but not allocated, and shift it to other places. Meaning, Congress could already have brought in the money and said they're going to allocate this money, but if it has not actually been used yet for a handful of things, some of them affecting the Pentagon, some other areas, it may be this FEMA money that the president was talking about that Kelly just mentioned, the president can, in an emergency action, move money that has been appropriated but not yet allocated to where they see fit. And there are guidelines, there are bumpers in there, how far the president can go with that. But that is what I read, that you have to, that the margin, the sweet spot for some emergency action is between the appropriation before allocation.
But then he also risks a lawsuit from the other side,
sure,
which will then cause more delays. So whatever it is was deemed as an emergency, though.
Yeah.
President Trump facing a lawsuit? Never heard of.
You know, this is, it's going to be, yeah, these are going to be, which, like Kelly said earlier, if we had a system where, and maybe it's going on, maybe it's just not for us to see, that there are members of both parties behind the scenes doing things like saying, okay, listen, give us this section here. We want to put up a barrier, wall fence, horse strand, barbed wire, whatever it is. We're putting up a barrier here. Y'all give us this. We won't do it over here. I mean, that's how Washington works. Whether you like it or not, that's the system. That is compromise. That is what our republic is built on. But right now, what I see laid out last night on the two primetime addresses and what we hear in the rhetoric every day is that, no, we're going to stand over here in our corner and we're going to hold our breath and cross our arms and to heck with you.
And that seemed like something that the president was alluding to, and something I don't completely understand. The fact checkers last night were ready to go after it. But when the president said that Mexico would pay for the wall through savings in the new trade agreement, and all the fact checkers jumped up there and said, well, it wouldn't go into those coffers. It wouldn't go towards actual border security. I don't understand why, if we are saving money in an agreement with Mexico, why that can't be used for security along the border.
Did you, you know, we talked so many times about the Alabama state budget being earmarked at 93%. The federal budget is at about 75% of earmark.
Mm.
It's 66 or 75%. I mean, maybe it is two-thirds and not 75%, meaning that there are certain programs that we, the people, have decided through laws that have been passed that they don't get to decide on in Congress about how much money is going to go here, how much money is going to go there. So quite possibly those coffers where that revenue comes in are somehow through the Byzantine system of, you know, old paint on top of old paint, mm-hmm, in Washington. I don't know that's for sure, but that could be why they're saying that couldn't happen.
It's all above my head.
Me
they
too.
Should just bring them some satsumas like you do,
mm-hmm,
and make the world a better place.
Satsumas are good. I'm about to go make another run.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to make a satsuma run here today if I get a chance. I'll be back at noon today for Midday Mobile. Remember, vote right now. How long will the shutdown last? We'll get your votes on the front page of FM Talk 1065.com.